Good evening, workshoppers. Got another episode here tonight. We're recording a day late. Work could get in a little bit in the way of the recordings here, but if you're listening along at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, what have you, should hopefully get this up a little bit sooner than last week. Had some a whole bunch of work events and film festivals and all this other type of stuff that I have to go through and prepare for that kind of push back the editing, in the publishing of the last episode. This one, hopefully, not too much later, even though we were recording late. But yeah. So, we've got a lot happen since the last week. Last week we had Leviathan on, and it was a whole bunch of talking about, like, the what's going to happen, what's going to come out, when's it going to be? When are we going to go through and get the PTR? And I guess that by the time that we recorded this episode, that the PTR would hopefully be out. And because I'm recording a day late, that's actually the true reason why I decided to go through and record on Thursday as opposed to Wednesday. So that way I would be correct, in my saying that we would be recording, after the next PTR hits, because it just came out today. Today is, Thursday the 6th. The PTR itself just launched, and well, in addition to like some of the other, the PTR, we got a blog on the developer's kind of like design philosophy. In regards to Diablo 3, and where they kind of to give the community an idea of where the developers themselves sit at, in their mentality when addressing things within Diablo 3 and how they view balance. We've had some announcements of some changes up at the top with a franchise lead that is, I believe, a new position. I've never heard of that before. We've had an earnings call that also recorded earlier today with some interesting info in regards to Diablo Immortal. Yeah, I guess let's just go ahead and jump into it. One of the last things I mentioned there was actually one of the more interesting, in that we have now Rod Ferguson is joining Blizzard, going through and coming over, from the Coalition, who is the developers of the Gears of War franchise. And he was going to be joining Blizzard, I believe it's later in March. And when he joins Blizzard, he's going to be overseeing the Diablo franchise. Not 3, not 4, not Immortal, but the franchise as a whole. And like I said, I don't really think that this has been something that has ever happened before. And not even just like in terms of Diablo, but at Blizzard itself. Because there's not someone that like goes and overwatches both World of Warcraft and Warcraft 3, Diablo has to be, despite the installed user base of World of Warcraft, I want to say the Diablo franchise is probably one of the largest franchises that are out there, just in terms of like individual players, units sold, and how many properties that they're going to have. Between Diablo, Diablo 2, Diablo 3, Diablo Immortal going to be coming out, Diablo 4, if there's any other unannounced projects that they just haven't, shown yet, there's going to be a lot going on, and there's going to be a lot concurrently going on as Immortal will ideally launch sometime this year. And so it and Diablo 3 will run side by side until Diablo 4 comes out a couple years from now. And then Diablo Immortal and Diablo 4 are also going to be running side by side. So having someone at the helm that's kind of directing the franchise as a whole from kind of like a really high up position, maybe not as like down in the trenches going through and being like, oh, that looks off, that put that there, but just more of I guess almost like an executive producer that's making sure that everything is going together and flowing in the right direction. The closest that we've had to this is maybe like Alad Anham, after he came back to Blizzard. He immediately just kind of like dug into Diablo with Immortal and a little bit of talking of 4. But it seems that now they're actually having a true person taking over, because Adham is part of the incubation team. And so he's there going through and jamming out new ideas, new games, you know, for like Blizzard's next step. You know, where do they go for the next step in gaming? You know, Riot is going through and like really bringing competition to the table to try and like claim their spot in the upper echelons of development, you know, because they've always just had League of Legends, but now they're coming out with a whole slew of new titles. You know, the Legends of Runeterra, I think, is their card game that's in a beta testing right now that they have released out, or like open beta. You know, you've got in the action RPG side, Wilson coming out shortly. You've got, you know, Path of Exile 2 that's going to be coming out. You know, they're not done with the original Path of Exile itself. There's a lot that's going out there that's going to be challenging Blizzard. You know, we talked about this, of course, on the last episode, but it just, you know, Blizzard really has to go through and step it up. You know, if they want to, they can't just, you know, ride on the fact that they're Blizzard, especially with all the controversies over the last couple of years, you know, that continue to go through and plague them and everything that they do, how much of Activision, you know, influence is there, you know, going on within the company, and, you know, is Blizzard losing sight of the goals and the values that it once had? You know, and so with the unfavorable launch of Warcraft 3 Reforged, it's kind of re-empowering a lot of those people that were questioning Blizzard ever since the Immortal announcement. And, you know, because it is a far cry from what they wanted to go through and show off, you know, back in 2018. And just it's plagued by a lot of development bugs. There's the end user license agreement, you know, goes through and is giving Blizzard complete and total ownership of any custom maps that are created in the new Warcraft 3 Reforged. And you can't buy the old Warcraft 3 anymore. The only thing that they have available for download, if you didn't already own and register a key for the original Warcraft 3, that's it, that's gone. You can only get Reforged now. And so if you wanted to go through and republish a custom game or update it for Reforged or something like that, you're giving Blizzard the ownership and the rights. You know, this is obviously something that comes from the whole, you know, Heroes of the Storm Dota 2 fiasco from many years back and that lawsuit and controversy. But I think that this is probably not exactly the step in the best direction. That if you wanted... If a game or a mod or something like that, you know, sets off and becomes popular, you know, what Blizzard should have done to begin with is basically, you know, what Valve did. Hire them. Go out, find them. You know, get them. Hire them. You know, give those people jobs. It's you know, something that they mentioned that they were doing with Warcraft 3, that they went out with a whole bunch of popular and longtime map creators, and they brought them on board to go through and help and gave some of them permanent jobs. You know, if there's someone that's developing some really good custom games, you know, for your franchises, you know, maybe those people are worth going through and hiring and bringing on for development instead of trying to go through and be like, oh, well, we just own all other, you know, all other instances of, you know, Dota or whatever the next Dota might be, you know, within these games. Because if they come out with, say, a Warcraft 4 or a Starcraft 3 or something along those lines, if they're doing this in Reforged, there's chances are that they're probably going to try and put that same language, you know, into other titles. You know, we'll have to go and, you know, see where that takes it. But getting back on track, it is interesting to see that they are having at least that kind of like forward goal of that they're putting someone in charge of the entire Diablo franchise, that there at least is that dedication to all of the titles, you know, concurrently, and that they want to make sure that they all jive together and that they're not just a whole bunch of separate experiences with the Diablo name. And there's at least someone that's sitting back and saying, you know, is this really good as an entry, you know, to the franchise? Does this actually make sense within the world of Diablo? Or at least that's my envisioning what this position might be. We don't even know what his actual title is, besides the fact that he's going to be overlooking the entire Diablo franchise itself. And then also, just talking about Immortal in Diablo 4, there's a game that Leviathan and I forgot to talk about a little bit when we were talking about all the other ARPGs that are coming out, and that's Torchlight Frontiers, which is now no longer Torchlight Frontiers, it's Torchlight 3, that they're abandoning the MMO light aspects of the game and they're going for just a straight up traditional ARPG. We of course don't know what kind of pay structure it is, but from the developer interviews and the changes that they've made to it since the rebranding, it sounds like they're going, you know, away from the games as a service and focusing more on just the traditional, you know, closed box sale. That here you go, you pay, you know, you pay your sticker price, and here's your game, you know, fully packaged. You know, here's your ARPG, you know, a la what Diablo 3 was, as opposed to the games as a service model, such as a Path of Exile, and where Diablo, or not Diablo Frontiers, but Torchlight Frontiers was heading, was going to be that MMO games as a service, constant, you know, live updates, the MMO experience and all that, where you can go and interact with other people out in the world as you build up your fort, and you can see other people's forts and such. Now it's just... it's going to be a continuation of Torchlight 2. Most of the reactions I've seen have been overly positive. They really like the change, but I do think that it's kind of strange how we're, you know, this far into, you know, the next generation, and that structure leaves a lot of people wanting. It might be good for just kind of like a one-off launch, and then you might have an expansion or a big update. But in order to really keep a much larger audience, people are looking for that games as a service, you know. But at the same time, people hate microtransactions, even when it's just like cosmetic in nature and such. So we'll see how much of that old guard of the ARPG market is going to embrace, you know, this old school structure and help support, you know, the developers in the decision. Because one of the things that they came to this point is that. That's a lot of the feedback that they were getting from their internal testers, their closed, you know, their closed beta testers, you know, the people within the community that they're going through and sharing the game with to get feedback and such. And this is ultimately the direction that they wanted to do. It also is moving away from Arc over to Steam. So it also makes me wonder, you know, where the ownership lies, because they had been for a while partnered with Perfect World, and that's why they were using Arc. And Perfect World is very big into the microtransaction loot box system for all of their games. Some do it well, some not so much. I wonder if they're able to like get their independence, or they're changing publishers or owners or something along those lines, and that allowed them a little bit more freedom to go that route. I haven't seen anything addressing those particular questions, you know, and we might not know until we get closer to the actual release date for that game, and we start to see, you know, more coming from the developer or the publisher side of things. Yeah, I guess kind of going back a little bit more into the Diablo, the actual Diablo related news on the Diablo podcast. Earlier today was the actual fourth quarter earning results, you know, from 2019. So this is closing, you know, this is the report going through and closing out Activision Blizzard's financial year. And there's some interesting things that relate to Diablo. One of the things that they're going through and talking about, let's see, where was it? So the quarter four net revenues from Blizzard was just shy of $600 million, 44% operating margin, and it says that it had revenue growth from World of Warcraft and Overwatch, but were offset by declines in both Hearthstone and Diablo. You know, which is interesting that they would register Diablo as a revenue decline when you're talking about, you know, an 8-year-old game. Is Diablo itself really selling enough copies still to try and say that they're getting declines large enough in order to offset revenue growth from World of Warcraft and say Classic? I'm not quite sure what exactly is driving that, unless they're maybe going through and saying that it's increased development costs, but that would be for a title that hasn't even launched yet. As we found out, you know, since BlizzCon, Diablo 3 is basically a skeleton crew. It's just a couple of guys, and they even have to offset the art in order, you know, to develop these new sets that are coming with each of these new seasons, new patches. And then the only other place that they go and they talk about Diablo, let's see. Go back over in here. So Diablo Immortal, the development with the mobile developed for mobile in partnership with NetEase plans its first regional tests in the middle of 2020. Yeah, so that that means that we're finally, you know, getting somewhere. We're getting close to launching off the ground with Immortal. It should hopefully be out this year if they're going to be starting tests, you know, in the middle of 2020. It's going to put it somewhere around summertime. But it says regional tests, and this is something that they originally said that they wanted to have a simultaneous launch globally. But are they going to launch tests first, you know, overseas, or are they going to launch tests here? Obviously, the largest critics of the game, you know, are in the Western markets. Those are, you know, the U.S. and Europe are the ones that have been the ones that have had the most complaints about Immortal, the loudest, you know, belly aching and grumblings. So I wonder if maybe to offset that a little bit, if they'd actually do the first round of testing in these markets, just to kind of like get it out there, because the game is fun. I know I've said this, you know, for over a year now. The game is good. It plays smooth. The demo that was at the 2019 BlizzCon was awesome, had fantastic voice acting, the quest system was really nice, with the extra little UI bits it felt as if you were really zoomed in, and I wish maybe they'd pull the camera angle out a little bit, but that was like my only complaint when going and playing the game. But other than that, it still feels like a really smooth, great game. And I think once people actually start getting their hands on it and more people try it out, that it might ease some of those complaints. But we'll never know until people actually get it in their hands. But it is at least a sign that Immortal is, you know, probably nearing its final stages in development and is starting to get to the point where they're ready to go through and release it into the wild, release it for beta testing. And of course, now into the meat and potatoes of it. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had, I guess just really the last week, we've had a lot of going ons in the world of Diablo 3. Starting with, we had a developer blog going through and talking about balancing and class set design. And here we got to learn, you know, a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes. Excuse me again, from the developers, where they go and they talk about, you know, Paragon, greater rift levels, things that they use in order to gauge class balance. And there's some interesting things that they go and they talk about, where things that they consider when they look at the disparity between different classes, greater rift clears, is like, what are their Paragon levels? Because that's a significant increase in power if you're trying to compare the results of someone that's only Paragon level 3000 versus someone that's Paragon level 7 or 8000. And then also, you know, is there certain things that class set does well, such as, are they a good Rift Guardian killer? You know, is it mainly a support role? Where does this class set sit within the meta, within the community itself? And then, of course, you know, some of the, you know, obvious things that seasonal buffs aren't included when they factor in, you know, set power or class power, because it might favor one class over another or one set over another. And they also don't want to do direct one-to-one class comparisons, that they feel that everything should perform uniquely, that it shouldn't be that, well, just because, you know, this class has this power, we should give that power to everything else. And we got to see a little bit of the process that they use, and when they go through and they are factoring in class set performance, it's measured at greater rift 130 solo in 5000 Paragon. Now, that does seem a little bit steep, you know, in terms of how much Paragon that it has, But for your typical player that's going to be grinding out at least like a 1 to 2K every season, 5,000 Paragon at this point is going to be easy. So your typical, not even necessarily a hardcore player, just a seasoned veteran, someone that stays with it, would be somewhere within at least that range. And a Paragon 130, non-seasonal, when you have your full range of Paragon, your best gear, and like fully leveled gyms across the board, 130 isn't that bad. 130, should be obtainable by pretty much everyone. And that's one of the things that they look at. And when they take in like some non-season, leaderboard scores and such, and they look at it across everyone, everyone is sitting around 130, with the exception of the Crusader, the Demon Hunter, and the Necromancer. The Demon Hunter being at 125, when all the collective scores are put together, Necromancer 123, and the Crusader 138. And that is something that they're addressing, because this patch brings in something that we've not seen in a while, and that's some nerfs. But they did, go through, and just talk about what they think is acceptable, and anything that's within 1 to 2 is fine. 3 to 4 they consider like a warning zone. So if you have one class that's doing a 130 and another class that's doing only like a 126, it's like they're keeping their eye on it, but they don't want to do any changes, because that might just be, oh, well, there's a lot of factors that go into it. They might not need to change anything, because as I was talking about a couple episodes ago, with the Necromancer, being one of the lowest performing classes this season, probably wasn't so much because the Necromancer is underpowered, which, as we kind of see from some of these balance numbers, that they are, dragging behind the other classes. But because people are just kind of tired of playing Necromancers, and you have people shifting away from them. And so there's not as many of the hardcore, those really good top tier players that are playing it in order to push those higher end clears. And that's something that you'll also notice a lot that's kept the Witch Doctor down for a very long time, is that because they really weren't competitive for a while, competitive players never really played them that much. But they do want to say that anything that's outside of five Greater Rift levels, that is where it warrants change. If you're performing outside of five Greater Rifts, you're basically at that point, you're doing around half damage, compared to the other classes. This is something that they really have to address, and that if you're doing that far outside, it probably is probably not a fishing issue or a time investment or player skill, that something is actually happening within that class. Which, is kind of something that we can see from their own data is happening to the Demon Hunter and the Necromancer. And guess who are the last two class sets that are going to be coming out with the whole rollout? Because in this particular season, we actually got three class sets instead of two. Not so many secondary items changes as we had seen in the last patch. So last patch, say, in addition to the Monk and Crusader changes, they did some balancing to address barbarian issues. This time around, they're not doing really anything outside of that. They're just doing the they're just focusing on the three classes, which is the Barbarian, the Witch Doctor, and the Wizard. And I imagine at this point in the game, since these PTR notes came out last week, you probably have already read them. You're probably already familiar with them, so I'm not going to go line by line through the whole thing. You probably are well aware of all of the changes that are out there. But just to kind of hit, some of those things that they've done for the Barbarian, I will remain vindicated on this one, in that it is a frenzy build, and I admitted that I had no idea what they were going to do with barbarians, but frenzy maybe? And they did a frenzy build, which apparently is doing really well. Some of the earlier reports that I've seen today is that the attack speed bonuses that you get from frenzy, and how well this just deletes mobs, is crazy. I can't wait to go through and see it. The class art itself, from some of the screen caps I've seen, looks awesome. All three of the sets, I think, looks amazing. this time around, where there is some sameness from the Crusader and the monk, and there was some complaints of maybe like resolution issues and stuff like that. I think they really knocked it out of the park on these three class sets this time around. I don't have a good screen cap to share. I'll get them for the next episode, as I haven't seen someone that had the complete class set together, just some of like the shoulder pieces and the helmet, or some other person had like the chest armor. By the next episode we'll have the complete set and I'll be able to show it off. But yeah, the barbarian full-on frenzy build seems to be doing really well. For the witch doctor, I was wrong on this one because I wanted zombie bears to come back, but they didn't go back quite that far. They only went back, a couple of seasons to win Spirit Barrage, the Legacy of Nightmares Spirit Barrage, because of its interaction with bonuses for pets, was pushing, some solo greater rift clearing, as well as like getting themselves back into the group meta for a little bit until, the Necromancer came along and put them back in their place. But they're going through trying to bring that back. Some theory crafting that I've seen from this one, from resident theory craft expert SVR, that this build should just be crazy, like literally insane, and that this is going to be like one of those top builds for speed runnings. This should replace rat runs and also be viable for higher end clears. And then the wizard. I was kind of half right on this one because I was saying Hydra Blizzard. It's just Hydra, but they did add Frost Nova to one of the items. So it's like, what, the Hydras will now just randomly cast Frost Nova. But it's interesting in that the damage reduction is based on the number of heads that you have out. With the Serpent Sparker, you can have the two Hydras, and then the set bonus adds two heads to each of the Hydra spawns. And then each one of those heads gives you 8% damage reduction, but every time that you take damage, a head dies. And so you're kind of going around dropping your Hydras constantly. But as you, if you get hit a couple of times, all of a sudden your damage drops because you're also getting 1,000% damage bonus for every Hydra head alive. So just a couple of hits and your damage reduction drops. And so now you're going to take even more damage. And then your damage output itself drops off significantly too. There is an internal cooldown on that one, so if you get all of a sudden just get hit by a lot of enemies all at once, you're not gonna all of a sudden just like lose all of the heads. They'll still be there, but it is weird that they would tie both your defense and your offense into the same thing, because that's one of the issues that necromancers have. With like the Wrathma or just the Singularity Mage builds, that it's almost not worth it running their cheat death passive, because if you die, it kills, the cheat death will proc heal you back to full, but then kills all of your minions, and so now your damage is zero. And if it hits you at a bad timing with your cooldowns, you might just basically just have to take the L on that one, and wait for a reset before you can get, Land of the Dead and Simulacrum back up in order to actually go and start killing again, and it can just, all of a sudden goes full stop. But we'll have to see it in practice. Again, the PTR itself has only been live for about what, 8 hours now. I haven't even had a chance to like really dig in there and try out anything that I am hoping to get some time over the weekend to go and jump in. I'm really interested in all three of these sets, and I'm not sure what I'm going to play for the next season. I'm probably going to end up doing Witch Doctor, but the Wizard one just gives me memories of playing, just the Blizzard Hydra back, before during Classic, before Reaper of Souls. And like I mentioned earlier, this patch has one of those things that we really don't see all that often when it comes to Diablo 3, and that's nerfs. It was they did basically two rounds of nerfs. The first one for Crusaders is that you can no longer cancel the animation for Heavens of Fire, or Fire of the Heavens. And so that way, one of the things that allowed Crusaders to have such a huge damage boost and be able to clear so high, even disregarding the seasonal damage buff, is the fact that you're able to cast that Heaven's Fury so fast because of like not really a bug, but just you can cancel the animation when you're going through and casting, allowing you to have, dozens go off within the span of like a second or two. So now they're making it so the entire casting animation has to complete before you can cast the next one, which, while I won't say is going to kill the build, you're not going to have anywhere near the clears that you see right now, even barring the seasonal buff. So in the era, the non-season, you're not going to see Crusader clears quite that high when this nerf goes through. But again, is that something, should a class be able to clear a 150 solo? Yes or no? That whether so that will pretty much kind of like answer whether this is a necessary change or not. Is just the whole should a class clear 150 solo, barring the season 19 seasonal buff? If they should be able to clear a 150 solo and that's an attainable goal, then maybe this is a pretty crappy nerf. If not, then this is just balancing Crusaders, and bringing them more in line, as we saw that they're well above everybody else with that 130 baseline. And the other nerf, comes to Bazooka Wizards, because they're nerfing the Etched Sigil, Death Witch, as well as the Mantle of Channeling. They all now have a 1 second delay from when you begin to cast the spell or to channel till when the buff itself takes place, now making it effectively impossible to stack all of those bonuses on top to one-shot things. Basically, nuking the bazooka build. And kind of like there's some people that have been still trying to go and keep it relevant, keep it together. But it does appear that it is just dead, gone. And that they're gonna have to go through and try something else. Because the Bazooka Wizard is one of those things that, not necessarily is responsible for, but has helped with a lot of the non-seasonal 150 clears. So this will set back some of the standard meta groups, though, there's other things that they did before the Bazooka Wizard came about in order to get 150, with the overall power boost that a lot of people have been getting over the last couple of patches. These new class sets, we'll probably see some changes going on, not just in the season 20 meta, but in the season 20 era, because I imagine with changes of that nature, they're gonna have to reset the era for non-season in order. Excuse me, in order to wipe the leaderboards. Because if you're not going to be able, combined with like the Crusader nerf and the Bazooka nerf, you're not going to be seeing those numbers as easy as you did before, unless these new class sets are just easily replace them, which they have some potential to do that. And this is, of course, just the first round. If anything is like just way out of line and super crazy, I'm sure we'll see some things, rolled back or maybe buffed a little bit if anything isn't performing well. Because this should be the first PTR where they did acknowledge that maybe the 1 week PTR model that they're going off was a little bit too short and that they need to give it some more time. And so we should hopefully see a little bit longer of a PTR this time around before they go through a launch, which does mean that season 19 is actually going to be a little bit longer than expected, because we might not be getting season 20 until March at this rate. And of course, finally, the last thing is that we have the actual season theme for season 20, which is going to be the season of the Forbidden Archives. They're completely unlocking Kunai's Cube, that they're no longer having the item type restrictions. And that you don't have to have one weapon, one armor, and one piece of jewelry. You can equip anything and everything that you want. So if you want to equip three weapon buffs, you can equip three weapon buffs. If you want to equip three jewelry slots, you can equip three jewelry slots. There's no stacking, there's no doubling up. So necromancers, you can't just put in three crispins and call it a day. That it will, it acts just as it is now, to where if you're wearing an item and have it in the cube, they don't stack with one another. If you have the multiple instances within the cube, they will not stack. But this should be interesting. I really like the idea of this. And this is one, without even having tested yet, I hope that they make this the norm. I know that, well, this is one of those things that you could really hope that the Season of Nightmares was amazing, and so they made it part of the game where you could go through and you can now get the Legacy of Dreams gym so you can play without having to be reliant on the Legacy of Nightmares set to play those lawn-style non-set builds. This would be awesome if they just kept it as a base part of the game. And if enough people like it, enough people get in there, test play, and go through and make their thoughts heard on, forums, Reddit, Twitter, what have you, who knows? They might go through and grant that request just as they did, with the Legacy of Dreams gym. But they also have what was it? It's going to be a new portrait frame and a new pet, and I believe. The pet was a bat-like creature. I think I can find this one real quick. It was like a vampire. It was like a vampire bat pet, I think it was. I have to try and find who was sharing it earlier. Crap, I can't find it. Let's see. There we go. Okay, so we've got it here, on Diablo fans. So you've got zoom in there. Sorry for the little server warning there. But you've got that, kind of like vampire bat pet thing, which, looks pretty cool. It's kind of funny because that seasonal portrait frame and such looks very much like a necromancer. It's very necromancery. So was there something that caused them to skip the necromancer and go on to something else, for this particular season? And that they just, well, this is the artwork that they finished first, so we're going with it. Kind of like going back to the point when we were talking about the class design balance. That when they were going and saying, that we know that the Necromancer and the Demon Hunter are performing below what the other classes are, and they're the last two classes in order to go through and get these new class sets. Does it line up? A little bit there. It makes you wonder as if this was done intentionally, that maybe they're putting a little bit more work into those two classes, and that we might see some barbarian style changes like we saw in season 19. That they're gonna go through, they're gonna, in addition to having the new class sets, which will hopefully, be very powerful and bring them up to the level of that all the other classes should be enjoying after they get their new class sets. I'm not gonna make assumptions now, like the Witch Doctor and the Wizard are going to go through and start performing because the Barbarian is already doing well without the new set. Just with the buffs and changes that they had back in season 19, to where if in season 21 they do the same thing for the Demon Hunter and the Necromancer, where in addition to going and giving them one new set each, that they also go and address some item balancing issues for those two classes in order to bring up their other sets, back up to that same level, that will be cool. As a both a fan of the Demon Hunter and the Necromancer, it's a bit unfortunate that I'm gonna have to wait so long for either one of those, but it is at least hopeful that extra time that they're spent going through and working on them is, going to see some pretty cool changes. With that, and it kind of brings an end to the episode. I'm really excited to go through and see what stuff that the PTR is going to bring, what potential changes that they may have made by the time that I record the next episode here in a couple weeks. I'll be recording on Wednesday the 19th. Who knows? We might even have that Diablo 4 quarterly developer update. They said they're going to be doing it once a quarter. They didn't say when within the quarter, and so it will still actually be all the way till the end of March, but hey, you can be hopeful, right? Mid-February, middle of the middle month of the quarter, just right there, works all nicely, and I just want to know more about Diablo 4 sooner rather than later. But sadly, we've got to wait. But yeah, That's going to go through and bring me to a close here for this week's episode. I look forward to going through, testing out the PTR, seeing what changes they have wrought, seeing how well that the Hydra set goes through and performs. That's, I hope, brings back so many memories when I go and start playing that one. I have no idea if Blizzard will even find a way into that particular build, but maybe we can make it work. We'll have to see. But until then, you know, if you enjoyed this show, if you have any questions, comments, if you have experiences from the PTR, please let me know. Drop me an email at westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. And again, that email is westmarchworkshop@blizzpro.com. I also stream here live on Twitch at twitch.tv/blizzpro every other Wednesday-ish at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. You know, so be sure to go through, stay tuned. You can follow the show on Twitter. It's at the WM Workshop. Tweet out, you know, when I'm going live, if we're going to have any special guests on the show, any changes, you know, that we have to the streaming schedule because of work or anything like that. You can also go through and find, you know, everything that I talk about here on the show and more over on diablo.blizzpro.com, as well as, you know, catch the articles that I write over on Diablo Fans. We are even in game. You can join us for the BlizzPro clan. You can also check us out in the Westmarch Workshop community, you know, or go through and hop on discord.gg/blizzpro for a Discord server. And of course, you can always find me at nineballgamer on Twitter or twitch.tv/nineball for the once every millennium that I stream. I think I'm up to millennium because I didn't make the joke last episode. I left off at century, I think. So I think that's about where we're at right now. Well, with that, again, you know, thank you for going through, joining me here live. You know, I know it's a Thursday, and so that kind of screws everything up. You know, or just, you know, sitting at home and listening to the show on YouTube or on your drive to work. Really appreciate it. And like Leviathan and I were saying in the last episode, this is going to be a pretty exciting year. Not just for Diablo, but ARPGs in general. And there's a lot that's going to be coming out, a lot of competition. And, you know, with competition, it keeps the developers honest. They actually have to, like, push the envelope forward or just really home in and making sure that they've got the thing that they've decided to make their niche, you know, just sing. And, yeah. And with that, I'll catch y'all next time.